You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime, Marcus Show Me State Vandenberg. What's going on, brother?
Oh, I had to be the racist state now, huh?
Hey, the whole state's not racist, is it?
Well,
just the portion.
I don't know. Let's see. St. Louis, we had Ferguson. That's Missouri. We got Columbia. That's Missouri.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say it's all racist.
Just the whole state.
Yeah, that's a blanket statement.
You out here cutting Chuck D promos? What's a smiling face when the whole state's racist?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's going to be that kind of show, folks. We got some interesting topics to talk about this week. We are going to get into second down, and Marcus and I are going to give our picks for this week's upcoming football games. We've also got another installment of the Black Quarterback Power Rankings. We've got some ratchetness, perhaps, in segment four to get into, and we've got a very special guest coming on to talk about what's going on at the University of Missouri. And so I think, Marcus, what we're going to do, because I don't want to waste any time, I want to get right into this show this week. I want you to let the people know out there, because we got a lot of listeners all over the world, as Dustin Rhodes would say. So for maybe some folks that are overseas or just really haven't been following the story, can you bring them up to speed on what's been going on at the University of Missouri before we talk to our very special guest in segment three?
Yeah, so the Cliff Notes version is there's been a lot of racial tension on the campus, University of Missouri, and it finally came to a tipping point this past weekend when members of the Missouri football team decided to basically protest in support of a Missouri grad student, Jonathan Butler, who has been taking part in a hunger strike. And members of the football team, African-American members of the football team, decided to stand behind Jonathan Butler and decided not only would they not practice, but they were planning on not playing this upcoming Saturday against BYU. So that, as soon as word got out on Saturday that this was happening, that's when this story went from being a local story to a national story, because now we saw that athletes were sort of using their power to come together for a bigger cause. And essentially, they wanted to protest until the president of the school resigned. This was on Saturday. And by, I believe it was Monday. Was it Tuesday? When did Tim Wolf step down? I'm losing my days. Let me check. By Monday, Tim Wolf, the president of the University of Missouri, had resigned. And it only took really 48 hours for the athletes to sort of flex their muscles. And you could say, yeah, maybe the school didn't want to pay the $1 million to BYU if they didn't play the game. Or, you know, the president finally had a guilt trip or finally realized, you know, maybe he wasn't the right guy to fix the issues on campus. But the issues have been going on for months now. And, you know, did you know about Missouri before this past Saturday, Nate? I didn't.
No, like I can't tell you the last time. Maybe Ferguson is the last time I thought about the entire state of Missouri. Like I hate the Cardinals. I don't watch Missouri football, so it's like, yeah, I had no idea about this until this story started happening and getting national coverage.
Yeah, I had no idea, and I have several friends who went to Missouri and never heard them mention anything going on campus. So I was totally surprised by the story and. You know, personally, was very happy to see these football players who, you know, I think there was a time where athletes took more of a political stand, especially in the 60s and 70s. Ali comes to mind. But it feels like, you know, outside of maybe the Northwestern thing last year, trying to unionize, a lot of times athletes are not using their power and not flexing their muscles. And we saw with Missouri what change they can make. So kudos to them and to the people who say, well, they wouldn't do this if they're actually in contention for something. Bullshit. We don't know that, number one. and number two, I think if that were the case, if Missouri was undefeated and competing for a national title, I think the president would have been gone by Sunday because I think deep down the boosters would have made sure that that football team played on Saturday, that they didn't take the chance of forfeiting a game because of whatever was going on campus. So that's pretty much the setup. And Eric Adelson of Yahoo Sports is actually in Missouri. He's in Columbia, and he's been reporting for Yahoo the last couple of days about what's going on campus, and he'll be our segment three guest.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. And this is a interesting story because, you know, you got the racial elements and you know, people talking about black or white. And then at the end of the day, Marcus, we found out that the most important color was green. You know, it's all about them greenbacks, baby, because I think once the football team waded into it, and I applaud them for that because I think athletes should use their power more, especially collegiate athletes, because basically the only power they have is saying, hey, we're not going to play. We're not going to participate in your money-making engine. And I think that, you know, whether you're talking about Grambling or whether you're talking about Northwestern or this instance here at Missouri, I love it when these kids stand for something. And you may agree or disagree with the stand they took, but I certainly applaud them for taking a stand.
Yeah, because look, I mean, the Clippers with Donald Sterling, they had a perfect chance to take a stand against Donald Sterling. And at the end of the day, they ended up playing. They caved, and these Missouri kids were gung-ho, and even though it sounded like it wasn't a popular decision on the team, it sounded like some members of the team were divided, but head coach Jerry Pintle said, listen, I stand by my players who are in favor of this, and we're not going to play, essentially. So it's a very complex story. If you think about just Missouri as a whole, going back to Michael Sam, I would have expected with Michael Sam coming out and everything surrounding that, that Missouri would be more of a open environment when it came to not only, homosexuality on campus, but also race relations. But it appears to be quite the opposite in terms of what's really going on.
Yeah, and even if the campus as a whole does not seem that progressive, the football team seems very progressive. You know, because like you said, the Michael Sam thing, that easily could have torn the locker room apart. And then you talk about this instance, and it seems like these are young men and a coaching staff that have their minds on bigger things other than just football. So we'll talk about that in our third segment of the show with Eric Adelson. But real quick, Marcus, before we go to break, I just want to let you know that while I applaud the kids, your man out there on a hunger strike, that's something I would never, ever, 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 ever do. And I probably need to go on a hunger strike for a couple of days and get rid of some of this fluffiness, but that's not something I would get down with. What about you?
I could probably do like a day. I mean, I've fasted before for like...
That's not a hunger strike. That's just being broke, going a day without food.
Well...
That's living in the hood.
I could do 2 days. And we didn't discuss this in the interview, but did you see all the stories about Jonathan Butler, the student, now that his family has money, all of a sudden he can't stand for something because he comes from a privileged background?
Interesting. the lines of race and money and class and all this stuff, it's fascinating, but at the same time, it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, people are so mad about this story. I mean, now that you, not only from a race aspect now, but now that money is involved, and God forbid, A, that student athletes use their power, and B, black people have money. It's like the two worst things that could happen. It's all happening in this one story.
And if you combine those, you have the kings of sport, because I have all the power and Marcus has some money. You got Marriott money.
Yeah, we'll get on the Marriott discussion later on.
So whether you're at home or on the way to work, on the way to school, or staying at a Marriott, keep it locked right here, because we'll be back with Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
Yeah, I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
It's time to talk about the sport of kings with the Kings of Sport. It's your pigskin preview, your gridiron gab fest, and your weekly football focus. It's time for Second Down on the Kings of Sport.
It's the sport of kings, better than diamond rings. That's why we're here to sing football. Sunday in the snow. Referees, whistle blows, weekend warriors toe-to-toe, football.
The old-timers, do you remember the names like Bronco Nagurski and Nitrine Lane?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is your one-stop spot for the latest and greatest news, articles, information, opinions, podcasts, synopsises, recaps, reviews. I can't think of any more synonyms for people giving their hot takes on things. But if you want to check out some interesting work being done by the people over at Place to Be Nation, head on over to placetobenation.com. They are down with the Kings. You guys are down with the Kings. So get down with placetobenation.com. And Marcus, it is time for Second Down, the segment that I think people are starting to really get behind. I think it's picking up momentum. It's picking up steam. It's coming out of the gate strong, like a Blaine Gabbert game-winning drive. I never forgave you for this, Matt Ryan. That concludes our Falcons talk for the week.
Y'all lost to the 49ers.
Hey, at least let Kaepernick beat us. I lost
to Blaine Gabbert.
When we were down, but I think we were down by four at the half. And I'm like, okay, we got this. We got Julio Jones and Devontae Freeman. Matt Ryan, you can't screw this up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he can. So, like, I was like, come on, man. Blaine Gabbert. Like, I almost turned him in my rise up jersey. I was like, no, it's over. Sorry, Samuel Jackson. I can't go with you no further.
Maybe the bye week, they'll figure it out.
I hope so.
They're like, looking good.
And the crazy thing is, they've looked really bad the last 4 or 5 weeks, but they're still in a pretty good spot in terms of looking towards the postseason. It's like, if they can get things turned around after the bye, then they still could have a solid season. But the way Matt Ryan has looked in particular the last 4 or 5 weeks, I'd be a little nervous if I were a Falcons fan.
Yeah, they're about one game, one and a half games up on that final wild card spot. Rams, well, here's the issue. The Seahawks are currently not in the playoffs. They're at 4-4, so you figure if they beat Arizona this week, they're going to be the team that you have to worry about in that final spot.
Yeah, and that leads us to our NFL picks contest. Marcus, maybe you can lift my spirits after a Falcons loss by telling me how I defeated you in our head-to-head NFL picks challenge last week.
I hate this stupid pitch challenge, man. Last week, you went 2-3. Yet, you still beat me because I went 0-5 again.
Like I started out like I'm the Falcons, basically. I started out with like 4 or 5 great weeks, and now I've just been like 2-3 for the last 3 weeks. But I'm still ahead because Marcus has unlike Blaine Gabbert, Marcus hasn't stepped up.
I don't know what's happened this year. This is
0-5. Wow.
And that's not the first time this year. I went 0-5 in week 5.
So what does that bring the current season standings to in our head-to-head challenge?
You are 25-15. I'm 15-25. 10 games back.
Oh, will Marcus be able to catch
up? This is right around the table. This is where I did good.
This is where you get good. So let's start with some NFL games this weekend. The first game we're going to choose, for those that are new to the program, we go through 4 games on Sunday and then the Monday night game. So let's start with Ace Boogie and the undefeated Carolina Panthers taking on the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota. What's the spread, Marcus?
Let's see here. Panthers minus 5.5.
Panthers minus 5.5 on the road. Who you got in this one? I'll let you go first so you can start redeeming yourself.
I got my new BFF, Cam Newton.
You keep going back and forth on Cam.
He's my number one quarterback now, after his stellar performance in Green Bay. So give me the Panthers.
Let's see. You said 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carolina's going to win and remain undefeated, but I don't know if they're going to cover. So you know what? Give me Tennessee. So, Marcus, make sure you get that down. Duly noted as I continue my run towards pick challenge greatness. I wish we would have just stopped after week 5 because then I would have a really impressive record.
Yeah, but
15-25 is solid, but it's not what it was. Speaking of solid but not what he once was, let's talk about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, who currently is, what, Marcus, 3 yards away? I was like, come on, man. I was watching that game on Sunday, and I was like, if I'm Indianapolis, just kick the field goal and let Peyton get one pass. Don't let that man sit with 3 yards for the whole week.
He's had a sit. He could have done it in his former home.
Like if I was a Pecan, I would like, maybe that's why I'm not a head coach. Like I would have gone ahead and kicked the field goal and let Peyton pass for 3 yards. But Peyton has a chance to break that record this week in Denver against the Kansas City Chiefs. Shout out to Ronnie out there in Houston. What's the spread on this game?
Denver minus 5.5.
Ooh, Denver minus 5.5. You know what? Give me Denver. I think they're gonna bounce back this week, so I'll take the Broncos.
I'll take the Broncos as well.
All right, so we both got the Broncos. All right, and let's see. The next game on the schedule, in a rematch of a couple Super Bowls, we have the New England Patriots, also undefeated, much like the Carolina Panthers. I saw a great meme that I tweeted out on the Kings of Sport Twitter page the other day, at CosPod. KOS_POD. The only undefeated teams in the NFL all have cat nicknames, Marcus.
Huh.
You got the Panthers in Carolina, of course.
Uh-huh.
You got the Cincinnati Bengals. And New England, they're a bunch of cheetahs.
Oh, snap.
So New England travels to Gotham City to take on the Giants. What's the spread on the Patriots-Giants game?
Patriots minus 8.5.
You got New York ties, so I'll let you go first.
Give me the G-Men.
You go with the G-Men?
Yep.
I hate to I hate to do it, but I think that this is not going to be close, Marcus. I think that there was a great stat on the ESPN, I think, today where it said that since 2003, the Giants are the only team the Patriots haven't beaten, which just seems ridiculous.
Wow.
So, you know what? I think that Belichick and Brady, they're on a mission this year. It's going to get ugly. And I'll go with the Pats as much as I hate the Patriots.
All right.
Next up, we have the aforementioned Seattle Seahawks taking on Coach Kangol and the Arizona Cardinals. What's the spread?
Seattle minus three.
Seattle minus three? Give me the Cardinals. Go Cards.
Give me the Seahawks.
All right. And finally, our last game of the week. Another undefeated team, Cincinnati, and Coach of the Year candidate Marvin Lewis. Eh?
I guess.
Cincinnati.
Regular season Coach of the Year, sure.
Yeah, regular season Coach of the Year. Coming off of a win against Cleveland. Takes on the Houston Texans in what should be a terrible Monday night football game. Who you got in this one?
The line is Bengals minus 12.
Damn. that's just disrespectful. Oh, Bengals minus 12. Who you going with?
Bengals.
Yeah, this is going to be ugly. I think if my choices are the Bengals or the Texans, my choice would probably be to finally watch Raw, because I think it's a go-home for Survivor Series. Yeah, it's the go-home for Survivor Series.
It is.
So, yeah, I think Raw will be a better viewing option on Monday than this game, but for the purposes of our challenge, in the words of Wesley Snipes, always bet on black, and I'm going to always bet on a black head coach. So, let me go with Marvin.
All right, Bengals.
So, those are our picks for this week in the NFL. We'll see if Marcus has a better week. It is mathematically impossible for him to have a worse one.
That is true.
So look on the bright side. So let's go real quick, Marcus, from the bright side to the dark side and go with a segment that is continually gaining in popularity, the Black Power quarterback rankings. And, you know, full disclosure, we're a little pressed for time this week, and I know that this segment, listening back to it the last couple weeks, tends to be one of our longest segments because of the Black Power quarterback ranking. So I think what we'll do, Marcus, this week is put together a composite list instead of giving two separate lists.
Actually, I have a story about a black quarterback. Let's do that.
On the rankings and go to the black. We got our black quarterback story of the week.
Yeah. So Cam Newton, my new BFF, again.
Okay, real quick, would you still put Cam at number one, or you still got Russ there? I think that's the question of the week.
Cam would be one, and then last would be, well, let's see, Kaepernick's out.
Cap's out. Does Blaine Gabbert become a black quarterback by
default? Nah. He went to Missouri. We can't claim him, man. Come on. Bad week.
That could do wonders for race relations.
Nah. Geno's out again.
Damn, Geno.
So we're down to just five quarterbacks now.
It's Tyrod. We got Tyrod back. Is Teddy playing this week?
Oh, okay. Tyrod's back. Oh, yeah. So Tyrod, Bridgewater, Winston, Newton, and Wilson. That's it.
That's the way you're
that's
going.
The list. No, I'm saying that's who's eligible.
Right. So yeah.
Wow. So yeah, Cam first, and then I just. Tyrod last. Well, Tyrod hasn't played, so they had a bye week. So
statistically, Teddy had the worst week, but I can't put that on Teddy.
Yeah, so I just Tyrod's last by default.
Yeah,
he's had to work his way back.
So Cam Newton turning heads, had a big win last week over the Green Bay Packers. So what's this Cam Newton story you want to talk about as we close out second down?
One last thing before we do that. One note on Jameis Winston. Hasn't thrown an interception in now 4 games.
Uh-oh.
After throwing four picks against Carolina, he's been pretty decent.
I told you, Marcus, it's a learning process.
Yeah. That was a little crabby, but it's all right.
Wow.
Too soon?
You keep bringing up old stuff, Marcus.
Yeah.
You're looking towards the future.
Uh-huh.
Same with Michael Vick. You always dogging that man out.
Oh, I do have a dog story for later. That's what it was. All right. Cam Newton. So he got involved in a bit of an incident with a veteran. Happy Veterans Day.
Yes, we are recording this on Veterans Day, so shout out to the veterans.
This happened before the Green Bay game this past Sunday. Mike Dobbs, a local resident at Fayetteville, but he's a Green Bay fan, bought tickets, bought these great tickets, spent $3,700 on tickets for five people, and he had the sign that said North Carolina Cheesehead, and it was a picture of a image of the state of North Carolina with a Green Bay logo in the middle of it, and he had this banner, which he got approval from the people in Carolina to display it, and next thing he knows, Cam Newton runs by, and Newton sort of ran towards the section, and you know, the fans thought, you know, maybe he's coming by to get, give autographs or anything, something like that. And I read the quote. Quote, he ran towards us, and we were like, yeah, Cam. And then he ripped the banner out of our hands, Dobbs said. Everyone, Panthers and Packers fans, were shocked, and we said, okay, it had to be a joke, but then he didn't come back. Dobbs said he went to report the incident to the customer relations staff that approved his banner and explained the rules to him prior to the game. I told him I want my banner back, Dobbs said. If you don't want it up, just give it back or put it somewhere and I'll return it. I'll just return it afterwards, but I had prior permission for this. When Dobbs returned to his seats, he said he was met by six police officers who were there to take the incident report. Six. He filed theft charges.
Who did they think he was? Meeko Grimes?
I know. Get this. He filed theft charges against Newton after quickly realizing it was too late to get the $500 banner back. One of the gentlemen said Cam Newton took it to the locker room and destroyed it, recalled Dobbs. I was shocked because that was one thing I wanted to prevent by following all the policies, all the procedures, going through everything that you asked me to do, and then you steal my property.
Mm.
Newton would later say after the game, it wasn't necessarily about tearing down the sign, Newton told reporters. It was about respect. You know, we played in Green Bay last year, and I didn't see this is Panther Country sign in their stadium. I was passing, the sign was dangling, Newton continued. Either somebody was going to have it to take it off, or I take it off. Newton likened the gesture to crossing the territorial lines of a gang or business. I mean, you're not about to sell a Whopper at no McDonald's, you know what I'm talking about?
that is true. That's very true. To be fair, that's a true point.
Yeah. So, Cam Newton, out of line or a jerk move?
I think he was on the right path to a point. I think you take it down because this is our house. You know, you're not gonna disrespect our house, but you don't destroy the man's sign. Like, you know, you give it to security or give it to somebody and have them take it back to him, but you don't destroy the man's $500 sign. Yeah. I don't know why the sign was $500, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, it's
like, if that was my sign, I'd be feeling some type of way. I can't blame Mr. Dobbs.
That's a lot of money for a sign.
Yeah.
And Ryan Khalil sort of took credit. He tweeted afterwards. He said, it's my fault. I'm the one that told Cam Newton to take down the Packers banner. I told him, just do it. Hashtag just do it. So, at the very least, he should pay the money.
Yeah, it looks like an ESPN report from a couple hours ago, the team has replaced the banner. But I don't know if Cam specifically had anything to do with that. It sounds like some PR department type stuff.
Okay, well, it'd be different if it was like one of those homemade signs you make on just paper. But if you spend money on that, then you can't do that.
Yeah. It's funny. My favorite part of the story is, you know, we thought he was just kidding and he was going to bring the sign back. It's like that Simpsons episode where Mr. Burns went to Cuba.
Yeah.
And he shows Castro the $1 trillion bill. Like, oh, can I hold it? Sure. And then he's like, okay, Fidel, give it back. Give what back?
Give what back?
Okay, Cam, give the banner back. What banner?
It's like, who was it? The Super Bowl ring. The Russian dude.
The Russian
president. Putin.
Putin, yeah, he jacked Bob for the Super Bowl ring. Yeah. yeah, Cam Newton. Number one on the program, number one in the black quarterback power rankings, but not number one in the Dobbs household.
No.
But I mean, pregame shenanigans aside, Cam had a hell of a game. Like his completion percentage is still not good, but three touchdowns to one interception. Like
he ran for one too.
Ran for one too. Yeah, he's very reminiscent of I don't know. Like, I wonder what you think about this, Marcus. He reminds me, if I was going to make a comparison, because, you know, people say, you know, oh, he's like Vic, or he's like, you know, this black quarterback or that black quarterback. To me, he's more like a black version of Brett Favre.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's got some mobility. He can throw for a bunch of yards, but he's got some interception issues, and he's got some accuracy issues at times, but at the end of the day, I think he's got that leadership quality that Favre had.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing Favre didn't have was the rushing ability, where Cam, that's...
I mean, Brett could scramble, but he wasn't as fast as Cam.
No, and he wasn't scrambling. He was scrambling for his life. Cam is scrambling to, like, move the offense down the field. Like, these are design plays, especially third and short. Like, how do you tackle Cam? You can't. He sits 5, 250. So, I think that's his biggest asset. It's just his ability to in short yardage situations where you have to not only worry about the pass, but you have to worry about trying to tackle this man.
It's like for the regular season, he's under 54% for completion. But at the end of the day, the number that counts the most is those wins, Marcus, and He's got a perfect record so far this season. So yeah, if as a fan of Cam Newton, even though I don't like the Panthers as a Falcons fan, like I want to see Cam do well, and I want him to go on to be, you know, what a lot of us thought he could be when he was drafted out of Auburn. But man, he's got to tighten up on that completion percentage. But other than that, man, like to me, Cam Newton is a guy that should be getting maybe even more coverage than he does currently. And I think part of that is because of the perception of Cam, and part of that is Carolina. Like, I don't know if the media nationally knows what to do with the Panthers.
I don't think so yet. And just looking at their schedule here, trying to see how many teams they've beaten that are actually over 500, and looking like just Green Bay and Seattle. Philly's not 500, correct?
No, I don't believe. Let me see. Philly's
4-4. So, and the Colts are 4-5. So, yeah, in terms of winning teams or 500 teams, they've beaten Green Bay, they've beaten Philadelphia, and probably their most impressive win might have been at Seattle. But they beat Tampa Bay, not good. They beat the Saints, not really good. Beat Houston and beat Jacksonville. I think what will be interesting, and I think what will be great for him and maybe the Panthers in general, is that they do play on Thanksgiving this year against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So having that national exposure where you're the only game on, it's a holiday, you're probably getting eyeballs that normally wouldn't watch a Panthers game. And maybe if Romo is back, that is even going to even heighten that game on Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that makes that much more attractive from a viewing standpoint. And you talk about the teams that they've beaten, and there's not a murderer's row, if you will, of names on that list. But at the same time, you know, you got to play who's on your schedule.
You
and as my Falcons saw against Blaine Damn Gabbert, you know, winning a game in the NFL is not a guarantee, even if you're playing a team that you should beat.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said for Carolina beating the teams they should beat. So shout out to Cam, who is number one on the Black Power Quarterback rankings this week, although we might have to deduct a couple points for being a jerk to an old veteran.
Yeah, I mean a veteran, dude. Come on.
Come on, dog. you had to destroy the man's side cam.
Yeah.
So, oh, man, that's going to end it for second down. Coming up next, though, Marcus, is something I've been looking forward to since you alerted me to this guest. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the Missouri story earlier in the A block. And coming up next, we're going to bring in a compatriot of yours that has some firsthand knowledge and information about this story because he is on the ground in Missouri. So I'm looking forward to this, brother.
Yeah, Eric Adelson's our guest coming up. We're going to talk Missouri, and then we're also going to talk some Ronda Rousey. He wrote a column this week sort of calling out her domestic abuse past, and we're going to talk a little bit of wrestling. Just a teaser for you, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. So look forward to that. And for those of you that might feel a certain type of way when we talk race on this show, I would suggest fast-forwarding about 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Because no, it's okay. It's a white dude. It's cool.
That is true. This is a landmark moment here. Marcus has booked a white journalist. in the words of Neil Patrick Harris from Undercover Brother, oh, it's about to get all racial up in this piece.
I don't see race, Nate.
You don't see race?
No.
You just see Yahoo purple?
Yes, I see purple. We all bleed purple together.
Yes, we'll see if we can find something to divide you guys by the end of the conversation. Right. Maybe lodging choices.
Okay.
So, stick and stay because we have an interview. We have a conversation. I'm not even going to call it an interview. It's a conversation with Eric Adelson from Yahoo Sports. So don't touch that dial. We got more Kings of Sport right after this. Some said Quest was whack, but now is that the case? I have a quest to have a mic in my hand. Without that, it's like Kryptonite and Superman. So Shahid come in with the sugar cut. Spike throws my name, but on stage call me Dynamut. When was the last time you heard the fight for sloppy? Lyrics anonymous, you never hear me copy. Top notch, baby, never coming less. Sky's the limit, you got to believe up in Quest. Sit back, relax, get up off the path. If not that, here's a dance floor, come move that ass. Non-believers, you can check the stats. I run with Shahid and the brother Abstract. Niggas know the time when Quest is in the jam. I never let a statue tell me how nice I am. Coming with more hits than the Braves and the Yankees. Living mad fat like a whole besides Bambi. The wackest crews try to diss, it makes me laugh. With my track record longer than a DC-20 aircraft. So next time that you think you want something here, make something different, take that garbage to St. Elsewhere. What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings. We good, Marcus? Do we have to pay warranty for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, the evolution of sports talk.
Makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Don't push me.
We are back on the Kings of Sport. Marcus and Nate holding it down this week. And one of the big topics this week, Brother Marcus, within the world of sports and even extending beyond the borders of the traditional ball and stick sports, is the story of what's going on at Missouri. And no, we're not talking about the big game with BYU this weekend. We are talking about some of the racial tension that's going on and some of the changes that have gone on at this campus. And, you know, since this is the Show Me State, Marcus, I think you and I need to talk to somebody that could show us a little bit more enlightenment or a little bit more information about this situation.
Yeah, our guest this week is a Yahoo Sports columnist. I don't want to play favorites, but he's one of my favorite writers. Eric Adelson, who's live in Columbia, Missouri. What's up, man?
Thanks, Marcus. You're one of my favorite editors.
Oh, too kind. Chet's in the mail. How's it doing, man?
Oh, it's been an emotional week. It's really been an incredible range of emotions here. I think a lot of people are very tired, very worried. And it's been interesting how the emotions have shifted. I think it was there was a lot of adrenaline over the weekend and into this first part of the week. There was certainly anger, and there was a lot of confusion and fear. And now I think there's just concern and also resolution. So a real range of emotions, and you could feel it from hour to hour on the campus. It's changing. When I got to the campus at first, there was a lot of commotion, a lot of talk, a lot of discussion. I think a lot of a feeling of power. And by that night, it was extremely quiet and a little bit scary, spooky even, desolate. I've never seen a campus change so much in such a short time.
Let's start with some of the social media, I guess, rumors from Tuesday night. From what you saw on social media since you were on the campus, how much of what was being reported was true and how much was just false?
Well, it was a little bit of both. I mean, there certainly wasn't, and I had to be as careful as possible not to tweet anything that didn't have any credibility. There was a rumor that the KKK was on campus, and people went and checked that out. And it was actually the student body president who retracted that rumor after putting it on social media. It's so easy to put something on social media, but it stays out there, and when everybody's watching. There have been a few stories that I've covered where you just really get the sense that everybody's watching. And this is certainly one of them. And when everybody's watching and you're wrong, it's a bad scene, especially when you're talking about race. And so there was a rumor that the KKK was here. It proved not to be true. But there was also other social media posts that were threatening black students on campus. Certainly a lot of people saw that, and that made the rounds very rapidly, and that ended up leading to two arrests, not just one, but two, of students that were not affiliated with Mizzou at all, but were in the state. So you had a little bit of both. You had very serious, credible risks, and then you had something that was not. And in the middle, you had this fog of war, where a lot of people were passing on information as if it was true. And that got people even more upset and more scared. There were reports, I didn't talk to anybody who had left the campus, but there were reports that a lot of students had left. It certainly looked like today the campus, I wouldn't say vacant, but it was very empty. And I think a lot of people were fearful enough to actually leave campus.
Now, Eric, you mentioned that big R word, race, and it's a word that gets everybody, they get their guard up when we start talking race, especially in 2015 and what is supposed to be, quote-unquote, a post-racial society. That's one of the funniest things I've ever heard, but that's neither here nor there, my brother. What I want to know from being there, you know, we hear reports of the tension. We hear reports of a climate of uncertainty and uneasiness between black students and white students on the campus. Is that something that you see firsthand when you're there, or is this something that you think might be a little bit overblown?
Well, I think that there is not a post-racial society. I actually think that the race factor is maybe stronger than it's ever been in my life at this point. I'll tell you why based on what I've learned here. Is that, for instance, I talked to a student who said that he's heard the N-word multiple times during his time at Mizzou. And then I talked to another student, a young woman, a freshman, who said that somebody was more than one person was joking, oh, you must like watermelons. And both of the students, when they were talking about this, they said, well, I didn't really think of it as a big deal at the time. I just kind of brushed it off. I went on. I said, well, that's how somebody thinks. But now both of them said, well, the more I think about it, the more upset I am. And so you're getting a situation now, I think, here and probably elsewhere, too, where this sort of microaggression or overt aggression, I think it's bothering minorities more than it maybe normally would, or if it's bothering them, it's bothering them in a way where they are being more vocal about it, either on social media or with their friends, and they're talking about it. And so something that may have been subtle or hidden or closed off is now much more out the open. That may be healthy, I'm not sure. It may be destructive. We'll find out. But I do think that because of social media, because of Ferguson, even because of the George Zimmerman case, I think a lot of this started there. People are talking about it. Minorities are talking about it, and everyone's talking about it, and it's out there. And I think that people are awakening to the reality of this divide. Students to me tell me that there was always a divide on the Mizzou campus, and even though she grew up in an area where she didn't really notice or talk much about race, she got to campus and she found herself surrounded mostly by black people and didn't really talk very much or associate very much with white people the way she did in high school. So it's on this campus. I think it's on every campus. And now we're going to be reading about it, I think, more than ever in the next few years.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, Missouri is not a school that I think, when it comes to race relations, prior to this news last week, in terms of being a school that would have these issues, how many schools do you expect to sort of follow up now with similar cases where not only where students use social media to speak up, but also will athletes sort of step in and try to leverage their power some?
That's a good question. I see a trend here. I think it goes back to Grambling. I don't think Grambling gets a lot of credit for what happened, but I think Grambling deserves a lot of credit for this trend. Now, the Grambling situation wasn't just about race. It was a lot about facilities, but it really was about respect. And when it happens at Grambling, a lot of it in the national perception is about race. But the way that the Grambling students came together, the student athletes came together, and actually started a movement where they put their values over the sport, I think a lot of people noticed that. And then you move on to Northwestern. Now, that was a union issue, but again, that's also about respect, about being heard. UAB, another example of that, where you have student athletes coming together. Oklahoma, and now this. Now they're not all the same specific topic, but it's about being heard. It's about coming together. It's about a fight for what's right. And I feel like when this whole history is written, I feel like Mizzou will be a watershed moment, but not the beginning. I feel like, to me, Grambling was the beginning of this current era. Now, obviously, you go back to the 60s, 70s, happened a lot. But to me, I feel like Grambling was a turning point, sort of an awakening. And that coupled with the Trayvon Martin situation, the Eric Garner, Ferguson, and even the Charleston church bombing. I feel like those two things have gone in tandem, and now they're weaving together. And I think you're going to see more of it. The question I have is, how much of a role are athletes going to play? I think college students will lead in general, but how much of a role will sports teams play in this? And I'm very curious to see if that happens.
Now let's stay on this train of thought for a little while, Eric, because I think one of the smartest and funniest thoughts on this that I saw in social media was Larry Wilmore from The Nightly Show. And he said, you know, I'm not sure if Black Lives Matter yet, but I know that black linebackers do. And so, you know, when you talk about the sports aspect of this, do you get a sense of how committed these players were? Were they willing to forfeit games? Because that's really the only power that players have. You know, we can talk all day about them, you know, showing that sign of solidarity. But at the end of the day, if they go out there and play those football games, you know, they don't have that bully pulpit, if you will. So do you get a sense of, were these Missouri football players committed to going all the way, even if it meant sitting out games?
I think that Some of them certainly were. I don't know that all of them were, because at least until when Gary Pinkel pledged his support, I think that it became not unanimous, but I think it sort of became okay. Because one of the big problems in college athletics, arguably the biggest, is that the coach has so much power over the student athletes. And I think that some of the things that are going to impede this kind of progress is the fear, not really of backlash among students, but really, is the coach going to take away my scholarship? I mean, you have some of this. This is sort of a separate situation, but you had schools talking about withdrawing scholarship money and per diem. I mean, that kind of power is really extreme, and so there's always going to be a fear of the coach. In this situation, I think Gary Pinkel sort of allayed that fear by supporting the team, and I think that made it okay to support. But there's so many factors in a student-athlete's decision to join or not join. I mean, you could have a problem with this, but not want to lose a game because of it. You might want to just pledge support in terms of having a sticker on a helmet. They talked about this here. Or covering up something on your uniform, or just speaking out on Twitter, or some sort of silent protest, the way Jared Cook did with the Rams, and hands up, don't shoot. There are levels of protest. This is a very high level of protest that they went to. I think in part facilitated or allowed by the coach. But I think that in the next situation, wherever it is, whenever it is, I think you're going to have different levels of agreement on a team. You saw this at Northwestern. You had people, Kane Coulter, who are definitely leading the charge. But 50 to 80 guys, all completely in unison over this type of sensitive topic, I think that's very rare. I don't think that's going to happen anywhere.
Funny enough, I was on the Missouri website, the athletic website, and noticed that three athletes signed letter of intent today for the basketball team, two being African-American. Do you expect any future Missouri prospects, especially on the football side, to now reconsider going to the school?
Well, that was asked today on the SEC media call. Gary Pinkel said that he talked to recruits and he said they were, quote, fired up. So I think short term it'll be a good thing because of him and what he did. And I think that a lot of African-American recruits are going to want to be a part of this. But there's also fear, and I think that I mean, for instance, I feel completely safe here. I'm a white, middle-aged guy, but all day I had people texting me, be safe, are you okay, is everything okay, get out of there, that kind of thing. So you can imagine if you're 17, 18 years old, and you haven't been away from home, if your parents, your friends are going to be like, are you sure you want to be there? It doesn't seem like a kind of place that's hospitable to minorities or to football players. So I think that the short term is going to be very positive. I think we've already seen that. You mentioned it. But if this lingers and gets worse and continues to divide the campus, I think that it's going to be a problem for recruiting all sports. I think next week is actually going to be very critical. Today was sort of a holiday. There were a lot of people not on campus. Some classes were canceled. You're going to have a game at Arrowhead on Saturday. I think if this goes into Tuesday, Wednesday, if there's more threats on social media, if there's another sort of skirmish either between media or students or among students, I think that it actually will serve as a threat to recruiting because people aren't going to worry about coming here.
Now, my last question on this, Eric, and I'm asking not only for myself, but on behalf of my people on Twitter. You know, I got to show love to my social media followers, but they keep asking me. They're like, no, Nate, I understand you're passionate about this story, but how true is it? And they want to point to me with the story you told earlier about the student body president who talked about the threat of the KKK, and that proved not to be true. But now, you know, you've got people on Fox Sports, namely Clay Travis, saying that what if this whole thing is based on falsehoods? And to me, I don't know about you, Eric, but yeah, one or two people might be wrong, but you don't get to this level unless there is something there. Where there's smoke, there's usually fire. So what would you say to somebody who says, you know, these kids don't know what they're talking about, or I don't think that this is true? What would you say to that person?
Okay, I've thought about this a lot today, so I'm glad you brought it up. You don't get to decide what makes somebody else scared. And that, to me, that sort of refrain has been in my head all day, because I've seen it too on Twitter, people saying, well, it was a report of a swastika that was found, where are the pictures, why don't we see pictures of that? And then this KKK thing proved to be untrue. But the fear is real, and if somebody has, and that to me is what I'm reporting on, that there is a fear, that there's a fear on campus, and just because you personally have not seen the swastika, or if the KKK didn't come, those social media posts, we all read them, that's scary. And if you're somebody that has read that, and if you feel afraid, then you are afraid. And somebody in Tennessee doesn't get to decide if you should be afraid of something that may or may not be true. If this is all somehow, I mean, this is almost like truthers, right? If you have Mizzou truthers who are saying, this never happened, the KKK never happened, the swastika never happened, if all that is made up, and these people that are telling me about the watermelon comment, about the N-word comment, about when they were in the class, and people didn't call on them repeatedly as the only minority in the class. I mean, that is quite the arranged discussion of slights that is going on this campus. Is it as bad as the worst people say? Probably not. But is it bad? I mean, if all these people are telling me it's bad, it's probably bad, and bad enough that we need to talk about it and realize it. And the other thing is this: I made very sure today that I wasn't just talking to African Americans. I wasn't just talking to men, just talking to women. I talked to Asians. I talked to whites, Caucasians. I talked to Hispanics. They were all scared. They were all afraid. We reported today on a social media post that encouraged violence on white people. So this situation is racial. Even if you are a white person, even if nothing has happened directly to you, there is fear and there is a racial tension here, and I don't blame anybody for being worried about that.
To people that hit me up and say, you know, this is a black issue, or this is something that these guys need to take care of, it's an everybody issue, because, as you mentioned, black kids are scared, white kids are scared, Latino kids are scared, men, women, you know, they're all in this state of uneasiness about their safety, and that shouldn't be the case when you're trying to get an education, when you're trying to better yourself. So it's not just a problem that the black folks or the black athletes need to fix. It's a campus-wide problem that everybody needs to work together towards.
Yeah, Nate, that's a great point. And it's the first student I talked to this morning was like 7:30 in the morning, and it was a student from China, and her English wasn't great, and I asked her if she felt safe on the campus, and she sort of winced and said, not very much. And my heart broke, because this is somebody who came from across the world trying to get an education, probably doesn't fully understand race relations in this country, doesn't fully understand what's really going on, the history of this state, the history of this nation. Came here for the opportunity, far away from the people that she grew up with and knows, and scared to walk across campus. Went to school because she probably feels like that's just the right thing to do, and probably didn't think that she had the right to stay home, that she came all the way here to go to school, she's going to go to school. That's somebody who's not going to be targeted, I hope, and not involved in this, but yet is thrown into this mix. And so, again, if you're on this campus and you're hearing about it from your friends, there's fear. And no, not every rumor is true, and thank goodness, nothing actually happened, but that doesn't mean that it's not traumatic. And so it's traumatic no matter what your race is, and I've certainly found that today.
Well said, well said.
All right, now for a lighter topic like domestic violence.
Jeez, yeah.
Rousey, yes. Yeah, okay, I've been following and writing and reporting about domestic violence for a while for Yahoo Sports, and on Twitter, I saw somebody tweet a blog post about a passage in Ronda Rousey's book where she struck out against her then-boyfriend after finding nude photos online. And so I'm going to read this book. I want to check this out. I want to see this. Because I haven't heard anything about this. This book came out a while ago. And I read the passage, and she beat up this boyfriend. She beat up this guy. And it didn't seem like at all in the passage that that he did anything physical towards her. She was enraged about finding naked pictures of her on his computer, and that caused her to lash out physically. So my question was, well, is this domestic violence? Seems like domestic violence to me. So I wanted to talk to as many people as possible, and my editors at Yahoo Sports were really good about encouraging me to keep talking to more experts, and I'm really glad they did, because every person I spoke to, there was another layer of complexity to this, because on one level, she acted wrong. She slapped him so hard her hand hurt. That's what she said. Punched him twice, threw him on the floor. This is not how you act in this country. This is not how you respond. And this is the kind of thing that if it was a male athlete who did this, there would be outcry for sure. Or if somebody did this to Ronda Rousey, if her boyfriend now, who's a fighter, did this to her, exactly the same thing, there would be a huge outcry and the defense of Ronda Rousey. So I wondered, is there a double standard? Now, the other side of it is the domestic violence is one of the things I've learned again and again over the last 2 years of reporting this. Domestic violence is about power. And in this situation, you can argue that Ronda Rousey was deprived of power because of the pictures, that this person could have used the pictures as power over her image, over her reputation, could have done something that could hurt her in a way where her gender is in play. And so in that way, you can say that even though she attacked him, she felt under attack and there was some self-defense here. So what I wanted to do was just to talk about all the sides of the story, the double standard, but also the power dynamic in this relationship and in our society, because let's face it, women overall are physically weaker and less able to defend themselves. However, I think any relationship Rousey's in, she certainly does not have that problem. So domestic violence is still an evolving issue, and the definition of domestic violence is still evolving. In fact, I talked to one person yesterday who said that it's the wrong term, that we should use intimate partner violence, because domestic violence connotes that it's in the house. It's not always in the house, and we found that over and over again that it's not in the house. This is, you know, the Johnny Manziel incident was in the car. So we're evolving in our understanding of domestic violence, and I thought that this was a key way to talk about that.
You mentioned Travis Brown, and I think you mentioned him in the column, but considering she's now dating someone who's been accused of domestic violence, do you think people are going to, if God forbid something were to happen to Ronda Rousey, do you think people would sort of point the finger at her saying, well, you knew better dating Travis Brown based on his past?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think overall, because Rousey is so popular, I think that there would be the most anger towards Travis Brown in that situation. But there's always victim blaming. I mean, even in the response to this story, I mean, there are a lot of people who are saying he had it coming. Now, I don't like what he did taking the pictures, yeah. But to get that kind of beat down, and a lot of people are saying that he should have gotten it. The victim blaming, even in this sense, is going against men. And I think that if there is something that happens, I think there will be people saying, well, she had it coming because she's a fighter and dated somebody with this past. Nobody has it coming. I think that's the bottom line here, is that nobody has a beatdown coming unless they are unless they attack first physically. So, but still, there really is always a push to find out who was sort of deserving of bad things that happened to them. And that's been so disturbing in sports, but also in society, that there really isn't pure sympathy for anybody, especially anybody who's rich and anybody who's famous. So if this happens, I hope it doesn't, obviously, I think you're going to get blame a lot more blame than sympathy, put it that way.
Do you feel that this impacts Ronda in any way going forward in terms of marketability? Because as we've seen with Ray Rice or Greg Hardy or even Floyd Money Mayweather, the public seems to be wishy-washy when it comes to outright, you know, not watching the athletes. They'll condemn them. They'll go on social media and rant and rave about them. But at the end of the day, they're going to watch a Money Mayweather fight, except for the last one because it was terrible. Or they're going to watch the NFL on Sunday. So do you think that Ronda Rousey gets any flack from this that actually hurts her where it counts?
No, I don't think so. I think that people love that she's a badass. And I think that they like that she's physical / violence. I think that that's her appeal. I think that she sort of stands for a lot of women who maybe would like somebody who says what's on their mind and hits back and feels that maybe, you know, this person is stands up to Floyd Mayweather and wants to fight against men and doesn't care what people think. And I think that will completely overshadow this. There are going to be people who are upset about this and blame, but I think she's just way too popular. I mean, even tonight on Twitter, there was talk about her being Sportsman of the Year candidate. I don't think that candidacy is going to be affected at all by this.
Last question. You interviewed Roman Reigns earlier this year for a feature you did for Yahoo Sports that I made you do because you love me. we talked wrestling often this show, and Roman Reigns, someone in the wrestling world who is not very popular and someone who is now in line to be the WWE champion, it looks like, at Survivor Series. What were your thoughts about Roman from your time talking to him?
I was surprised, and I'm still surprised that he's not popular. I mean, it's... You know what, I always kind of like, I grew up with wrestling, and I always kind of like it when the fans sort of revolt against the storyline. I think that's cool. I like that sort of they think that way. But with Reigns, I mean, the storyline is kind of foisted upon them. But I kind of don't fully get it, because even though he comes from this royalty, and the fans don't seem to like that he's sort of this heir apparent, in the same way people don't like Donald Trump because he said, well, I got a small loan from my dad of $1 million. You're like, listen, you were born on third base and they thought you hit a triple. I think a lot of people feel that way about Roman Reigns, including his name, by the way, that he's royal, and he just got there without doing anything, and then I'm going to cheer for this other heel or babyface who had to work his way up. I mean, if you look at Roman Reigns' story, I mean, that whole family is extremely hardworking. They had the ring in the backyard. You can't get to a place in pro wrestling without shedding blood, literally. And so the idea that he was just sort of put on this pedestal, I get it. But to me, it doesn't mean that he didn't work hard. I love that wrestling fans love the lunch bucket mentality, but Roman Reigns really does seem to have it, even though he sort of had a boost from his background.
Mm. So where do you see this going, Eric? Do you think that the fans will embrace him, or will they learn to love him, or is this a situation where, for all parties involved, maybe the best thing is a change of attitude for one Roman Reigns?
Well, okay, so between the three of us, we probably have 100 years of watching wrestling, so, and I might have the half of that. So, can you remember a character in the history of pro wrestling that was only bad throughout the entire career of a long career? It's very hard to think of one.
Ted DiBiase comes to mind, but he was never
Ted DiBiase?
Yeah, but he was never a champion.
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard for me to think of somebody who was loathed. I mean, Roddy Piper. I mean, like, when I was little, I was like, this is the worst person ever. And he ended up being probably the most popular. I mean, can you think of anybody right now in the history of pro wrestling who is more loved at this moment than Piper? Meanwhile, Hogan is not. And that was when I was a kid. I mean, like, I wanted to be like Hulk Hogan. Right now, Roddy Piper is more popular than Hulk Hogan. That's crazy to me. That's crazy to, like, 9-year-old me or 10-year-old me. So, I think, and, you know, even, like, I look back at Bobby Heenan, like, I miss Bobby Heenan. Like, I love Bobby Heenan. Like, he was hilarious. And so I just think that these things all change, and they'll change for him. Maybe they'll tinker and make it worse, but over the long haul, everybody becomes popular, everybody becomes hated, and it'll happen to Roman Reigns, too. I'm pretty confident.
All right. Thank you, man. I appreciate coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed Columbia. I hope you're at a Marriott. Get those points, at least.
Yeah, I'm actually a Starwood guy. So,
man.
The Marriott's a little bit, the Marriott's a little bit of a disappointment. I keep that on the down low, my Starwood allegiance. Oof. But, you know, I'm glad this came out at the end of it.
What kind of media member are you?
Yeah, I'm not. I think this is why I don't have friends, honestly, because all the other media people are in the Marriott, and yes. I'm the only one who's not. And I have no followers on Twitter, relatively. I'm not verified. There's people I know who are on campus here that they don't talk to me. They don't reach out. I think it's all because of the hotel allegiance. So, I'm not Team Marriott, and that makes me a heel in journalism.
It does.
Well, speaking of Twitter, real quick, brother, throw it out there so the listeners can follow you and keep up with your good work.
It's at Eric_Adelson, and would love to come back if you have me, and love to talk to any of your listeners on any of these topics.
Sounds good. Hopefully we'll have some lighter conversation topics next time around.
Yeah, we got to talk about the Pistons, man. Pistons are great. Man.
You and Al Toby about the Detroit Pistons.
Both are you a Lakers fan? What's your team?
I'm a Lakers fan.
Did they beat the Magic? Because that's also my team. I've adopted both teams.
Vucevic beat him at the buzzer.
Magic
won. Yeah.
Oh, the Magic won. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sweet. Yeah. That's awesome. All right. We'll talk about Andre. Andre the Giant. Andre Drummond next time.
All right.
Sounds good. That's Eric Adelson. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back right after this.
Tell me, yo, what's the scenario? Scenarios, radios, rates more than four. Scores for the scores, that's mother dance floors. Now I go for mine, shades of seashore. Ship shape, crush grapes, eights to play tapes. Takes make drakes, fake for the weight of an Ella, Ania. Simply just a leader. Base in the space means peace, see you later.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/the Kings of Sport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for yet another week. But before we do, we got to send a big shout out to our brother and sister shows in the High Voltage Radio Network. HighVoltageRadio.com is your one-stop spot for some of the wildest selection of shows on the internet for your listening pleasure. I'm talking about shows like Attack of the Fangirls, shows like Axology featuring friend of the program Hat Club Andy, shows like Bayside High and Drunk, The Ebony and Ivory Cast, The Gravy Age, Mad Mock, Must Hate Zombies, Mustache Cash Dash, The Pittsburgh Nerd Show, Podcast Unknown, Robin Slim, Z-Pac Nation, and of course, the award-winning Mr. Throwback Thursday featuring frenemies of the program, Bill and Jamie. So if you want to check out any of these shows, head on over to highvoltageradio.com and tell them the King sent you. Now this is segment 4, where every week Marcus and I look at some of the crazy stories out there in the world of sports and entertainment. This is our repository of ratchetness, if you will. And Marcus, last week we ended the show with a story about the boxer Yusuf Mack and Dog Pound Productions, or Dog Pound USA, the pornographic video company that he was aligned with. So tell me you got a story that can top that this week.
Well, we're going back to the Dog Pound. different kind of Dog Pound this week. This involves Raiders linebacker Ray Armstrong. The Raiders played the Pittsburgh Steelers this past Sunday, and back and forth game. Roethlisberger went down. Antonio Brown proved he's better than Julio Jones. You know the story. But what also happened was an incident involving Ray Armstrong and a canine service dog.
Okay.
I'll read the story. This is from ESPN.com. The Allegheny County Sheriff's Office is investigating a Raiders player, which a source with direct knowledge of the situation identified as linebacker Ray Armstrong, for allegedly taunting a canine service dog before Oakland's game Sunday against the Steelers. The alleged crime would be considered, get this, a third-degree felony in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Armstrong could face charges by the end of the week, according to the source. The Raiders player barked at the dog, lifted his shirt, and pounded his chest between exiting the locker room and entering the field area for warm-ups, according to Chief Deputy Kevin Krause. Krause said the player also told the deputy holding the canine to, quote, send the dog. The dog was going crazy, Krause said. The deputy was trying to control the dog the best she could.
Wow.
The sheriff's office notified the Steelers, the NFL, and the Raiders of the investigation. It interviewed witnesses and obtained video surveillance, which captured a portion of the incident, but did not interview Armstrong before he left town. Armstrong had no comment when approached by reporters on Tuesday. The Steelers considered this a police matter and did not comment. Armstrong could be subject to lead discipline if arrested.
Roger Goodell's like, I don't have enough problems on my hand.
The Raiders signed Armstrong in October 2014 after the Rams cut him for committing an excessive number of penalties. So, Ray Armstrong taking a page out of the Michael Vick handbook. By the way, Ray went to Miami. So, the U up to no good again. I've never heard of this rule before. I feel like I've taunted horses before, police horses. I'm glad I've never been arrested for taunting a police horse or a police dog, but really? This is a thing?
Oh, man. There's a couple things here, Marcus. First of all, shout out to Ray Armstrong. Like, that's a high-quality black name. Like, black athlete name. What is Ray Armstrong?
Yeah. All right, well, his government name is Aravius. Aravious.
Oh, man. Every day that Key and Peele sketch is more and more funny because it's more and more true. My name is Plexus Grundeplith, Maryland University. Cartoons plural, Virginia Tech. Oh, Key and Peele is so great. But anyway, back to this. So you got Ray, who has a great name. You got him being silly. He's only 26, so he's still in that young man range where you'll do silly things. I don't know why in the world you would want to talk to police or the police dog. I think you barking up the wrong tree when you do actions like that. But I don't know, man. Like, was Ray wrong? By the letter of the law,
by the letter of the law, but it's something that
it's like the dog wasn't being physically hurt. Like, Ray might have been pissing the dog off, but which to me speaks more to Ray's state of mind than the dog, because one thing I learned growing up around dogs, all various types and shapes and sizes of dogs, is when a dog starts acting crazy, you might want to stop doing what you're doing or remove yourself from the presence of that dog.
Yeah.
Especially a dog with a badge.
Now, let's say if Ray did this to an officer, where he walked past a cop, barked like a dog, and lifted his shirt up, Is that a felony charge? I mean, what would the officer do? Well, that's a stupid question because who knows if a black guy. But
I was gonna say, do you really want to ask that question in 2015?
I mean, the officer couldn't, in theory, arrest Ray Ray Armstrong.
Ask your man Tabo Sevilosha.
Yeah, that's true. Well, besides kicking the shit out of Ray Ray Armstrong, what could the cop actually do to him? I mean, the cop could say, "Hey, knock it off," but I can't see the cop arresting him for doing this.
Marcus, you want to take the story to an even bigger level?
Yes,
I am looking at I was looking for more information on Ray Ray, and I came across a story that was filed today from the BBC.
Oh boy,
the BBC has picked up this story, and they're talking about they spoke to Deputy Maria Watts, who was the handler of Bandit, the police dog.
Bandit,
which is a great detail, but she told WTAE Pittsburgh's television that Ray Ray walked past her and he was shouting, hey dog, as he left the locker room. Bandit was very agitated. He wanted me to let him go. I imagined with his training and experience, he would have gone to the target who was taunting him, and I don't want to speculate on what Bandit would have done.
Ooh, that's a threat.
So, it's silly on all sides. Like, for Ray Ray, you a grown man taunting a dog. Why? Like, what do you gain from that?
Especially when you're, you got to focus on the game you're about to play.
Yeah, how about instead of focusing on the dog, you focus on making more than one tackle?
Yeah.
You got one tackle in the game, dog.
He's also the guy who, when Geno Smith did play against the Raiders, that late hit towards the end of the game where Geno got crushed. That was Ray Ray who got fined for that hit.
Oh, man. It's silly. Like, I think the police are silly for making this, like, a big deal. Like, I think, if anything, this should have been just like a... Like, not even a misdemeanor, like whatever, like a public nuisance, like something like that.
Maybe a ticket. I could see maybe a ticket.
Like a ticket, yeah. Like for being a nuisance to a police dog.
Being a knucklehead.
Yeah, being an idiot.
Being a black.
Like, hey, dog. Doing a Kamala smacking his belly. Like, why? Why, man? Like, I need Chris Carter on this story. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Ray Ray. Then again, if any player was, if you were to say, hey, Nate, name an NFL player who's going to walk around doing the Kamala belly slap, taunting a dog. It's probably somebody named Ray Ray.
Yeah.
Pookie and them.
I can see it.
Oh, man. So do you think that they'll actually go through with this litigation or with these legal proceedings when it comes to Ray Ray Armstrong? Or do you think they'll just drop it?
No, I think they'll drop it. I hope they drop it. Because that would not look good on the state of Pennsylvania to basically, because he'd have to go back and put himself in. So
wow, you know what they should do, Marcus? They should have a PR photo where like Ray Ray and Bandit, like, they shake hands.
Yeah, that's what they should do. Make the best out of it.
Not only would that improve black people and dog relations, but it would improve black people and police relations, maybe.
And have like Michael Vick in the middle.
Like, oh, see, why you want to upset these people out here, Marcus?
Listen, I'm sure Mike Vitt is happy to know that this law does exist. Just in case he ever had any flashbacks to his former life.
Nah, I think Michael Vick is the last player you're going to see taunting dogs.
Yeah.
But speaking of Mike Vick, did you happen to see the poll we put up on Twitter this week, Mark?
I did not. I saw it, but I didn't see the final results.
All right. So, yeah, I don't know when Twitter started giving you the power to make polls.
About a couple weeks ago.
But it's a neat little tool. So when I say we, I mean me, but we're a team, so it's a good way of shielding myself. If anybody hates the poll questions, I can say, hey, it's a team effort.
It was all neat.
So this was after the Greg Hardy story broke this week with the pictures came out of Greg Hardy's ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the reaction, not from the media, but from fans on how that how they perceive the Greg Hardy thing. And I was like, man, yeah, people are upset, but to me, it feels like Mike Vick had a longer and more sustained outburst of anger and hatred than Greg Hardy did. And so I was like, huh, that seems like a good poll question. So I sent out a poll on Twitter, and I was like, hey, Twitter fam, the Greg Hardy mess got us thinking. We believe Michael Vick got more flack than Greg Hardy for his issues. What say you? And we got 20 votes, or 21 votes. And the final results, you want to take a stab at this, Marcus?
I'm going to say Vic.
Yes, it is Vic, and it is Vic by a long shot, by a wide margin. 81% of the listeners said Michael Vick got more flack for his crime than Greg Hardy did. Only 19% say Greg Hardy.
Well, to be fair, I mean, he got more flack even in the eyes of the legal system because Greg Hardy never served a day in jail for his crime.
Yeah.
Mike Vick served years in jail for what he did. So
that's the crazy thing. Mike Vick served years, and when he came out, he still had more people, I think, on his case than on Greg Hardy's case. When you got a guy that actually did time.
Well, what is to say about the pecking order in society when it comes to between women and pets?
And animals?
Who ranks higher? No, I'm serious. Who ranks higher, women or pets?
Wow. That's a legit question because, and I'll tell you, Marcus, you know, this has been a show of where we've walked the line when it comes to racial topics, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I was just going on the pictures, but Greg Hardy's ex-girlfriend is white, correct?
Correct.
I was going to say, she might be light-skinned, but yeah, I thought she was white. So it's like, if a big black dude, who's a bad dude by all accounts, beating up on a white woman, does not get people outraged, or more outraged than a dog, or the dog fighting, and the dog's being killed, I don't know what will. Because I thought for sure that once they saw the pictures of what Greg Hardy did to this woman, they were going to be cries for him to never play football again. And to a large part, I mean, we got some, you saw some discussion about it, but to me, it wasn't near the level of, I don't even think it was near the level of Ray Rice when we saw the Ray Rice video.
No. I think, well, I still think the video is more
video is
disturbing.
The deciding factor.
It's more disturbing than the photos still.
Even though what Greg Hardy did was more violent than what Ray did in that one punch.
Yeah, there's a visual there. You can see him throwing the punch. You can't
right.
see Greg Hardy throwing this
you
woman.
You see
into
the after effects
guns.
On the
yeah,
pictures.
Yeah, so it's not as jarring. But I haven't seen a Greg Hardy protest before a Cowboys game. Like we saw Michael Vick when he came back.
Like the most I saw was like you, I would have thought like the women's groups or, you know, the battered women, not the battered women, but just spousal abuse protesters in general would be out on this thing. But no, like other than the media themselves, whether it was Costas doing his special comment before the game or Al Michaels and your man Chris Collinsworth having that awkward transition by talking about Greg Hardy, folks, well, we're as disgusted as you are, but we're trying to do a job here, so we're not going to talk about it anymore. Like that to me was the extent of the Greg Hardy talk on the game.
Maybe Peter deserves some credit for what they did. I mean, they might be a little off the wall, but they were able to gin up enough anger with Michael Vick that they actually did have an impact on his life after jail.
Anger is still there. Not as much as it was, but there's still people that to this day hate Michael Vick and think that he shouldn't be playing football or he should still be in jail.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, yeah, of course, everybody with a rational mind knows what Mike Vick did was horrible. You know, I love me some dogs as much as the next man. I've talked on this podcast about my dog Jesse that I still miss to this day, and we're not gonna go down that road because this show has been sad enough already with all the heavy topics. But to me, man, like you're right, Marcus, you got to give Peter a tip of the cap because you might not agree with their message, but their method of getting that message out there, they're damn good at it.
It's powerful.
I mean, it sticks with you. You know that PETA is out there. And for this, man, it's like, I want to, like, for the, and I don't know, Marcus, I don't know if I'm pointing the right blame at the right people, but for the women that were riding so hard against Floyd Mayweather, like, where are they on this? Like, am I looking to the wrong group to be at the forefront of this?
No, I think, you know, that should be the group that should be standing up, and especially the thing with Floyd. I mean, we don't have any photo or visual evidence of the crimes he did commit, and Floyd did serve his time.
And Floyd's one dude, like with the NFL, like Greg Hardy is not the first person, even in this calendar year, that has had this domestic abuse thing on his record.
Yeah, and if you want to be really upset, don't be. You can be upset at the NFL. You can be upset at the Dallas Cowboys. You can be upset at Jerry Jones. But be upset at the legal system. The legal system allowed this man to not serve a day in jail for what he did.
Yeah.
And that's where it all starts, because the NFL was sort of in a position where he was suspended, yes, but if you wanted a longer suspension without jail time, it's you're running into a situation with Ray Rice where there's only so much you can do, and put it on them. I don't know how he got himself out of serving jail time, but that's where it started. It starts with the legal system, and until people like Greg Hardy actually have to serve time in prison for their crimes, then there's only so much these professional teams can do. I mean, yes, they cannot sign the dudes, but let's be real. Teams are out here trying to
play.
He can play. He's good. He was good, and he's been okay this year, but he was a guy who was talented. So guys like that get second chances, unfortunately.
I'll let you know, Marcus, that I made a stand because this whole thing has disgusted me, and I cut Greg Hardy from my fantasy team this week, and it's not just because after his first game where he had 3 sacks, he hadn't done much since. I'm doing this strictly for the right reasons and the moral reasons, Marcus.
There you go.
Greg Hardy is no longer part of the N-Word or the Fantasy Football Club.
Nobody should pick him up, even you, the franchise. Don't pick him up.
If you do pick him up, we'll look at you much like we did a few years ago when somebody picked up Riley Cooper.
Yep.
Like, that says a lot about you, brother. Oh, man. The other thing real quick to kind of wrap up this topic is when it comes to somebody like Greg Hardy or Michael Vick or even a Ray Rice, to me, the difference between somebody like Mike Vick and Greg Hardy, or even to a lesser extent, Ray Rice, is at least guys like Vick and Rice showed some type of remorse. Now, you could say at the beginning, maybe it was being sad that they got caught and they cost themselves
but
some
it's
money.
Something at least.
But yeah, Greg Hardy, on the other hand, Greg Hardy is just bold with not caring. He didn't give a damn what you think about him and his past.
He gives zero fucks what you think.
So that to me speaks more to, like, yeah, this is just a bad dude. Like, he's like, I mean, everybody has the opportunity to be redeemed, but Greg Hardy is just like, ugh. Like, I know you want to win games, but if I were in charge of an NFL team, Marcus, I don't know if I could write that dude a check.
He's in his Twitter account. He changed it earlier, but earlier his profile was basically like innocent till proven guilty. But his Twitter avatar is a photo of Tupac in a Cowboys uniform. And then his background image is his face on a $100 bill.
Wow. Oh, hashtag, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah.
So I think that's a good place to end this show this week, Marcus. I think it was a good show, but it was kind of heavy in some aspects.
Very heavy show, but a good show.
Speaking of heavy, rest in peace to Heavy D. Last weekend was...
Yes.
Was it the 4-year or the 5-year anniversary?
4 years.
4 years since Heavy D passed, so we might have to go out with some Heavy D, even though if you noticed, if you're a keen listener, you've noticed some Tribe Called Quest as we go into the breaks, but I think we might have to go out with a little Heavy here in segment 4.
Yeah, from Money Earning Mount Vernon, from where my family is from, and got to meet him back in the day, so still sad about that. And I still think Boston Public, one of his best performances as a performer, including his rap career. I think his acting career on that show was very underrated.
Yeah, he's an underrated actor. Like, I love me some Heavy D. Like, I thought that didn't even sound right, but I don't care because I'm showing respect to Heavy D, and we're not having a conversation like we did last week with Yusef Mac.
No.
But he was just great. Like, and I think, like, his final tweet, which is so crazy, was, you know, be inspired. And it's like, yeah, like, this dude was, you know, about that positivity. And he was one of the few rappers, Marcus, that could be positive and still be cool. Like, he didn't come across as corny when he was talking about, you know, we need to work together or help your community. Like, he didn't come across as, oh, man, that's whack. You know, because he was such a good musician and had an ear for what would make people dance. Like, you didn't care. Like, okay, Heavy wants to clean up the community, I'm down with it.
Yeah.
So, rest in peace to Heavy D. And that's where we're going to leave things this week, with the Heavy D music playing in the background. Marcus, if people want to hit you up on Facebook and or Facebook, hit you up on social media, maybe Facebook, if you want to give out your Facebook.
People have added me, so that they found me.
Oh, listeners have added you?
Yeah.
Okay. So shout out your social media if people want to give you feedback on this week's show or see what's going on with the world of Brother Marcus Vandenberg.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
All right. You can follow me in the number 8, MOZAIK, at Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter. Facebook, like the Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. Go to iTunes, leave us a review. If you leave us a 5-star review, we're stealing this from Black on Black Cinema. If you leave us a 5-star review, we will read your review, even if it's just a shameless plug for a podcast or a blog that you have. We'll read your 5-star review. The only caveat, I'm going to put it out here, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to read openly offensive, like racist, homophobic stuff.
Yes, no.
Like, yeah, we're not going to do that. But anything else within the realms of reason, we will read your 5-star review and give you a shout out. So iTunes, Stitcher, like, rate, review the show, share the show. Podcastland.com, vote for us on podcastland.com. And I think that's it, Marcus, unless you got anything else. We're going to pack it up and call it a show and come back and do it again next week.
Yeah, that's all I got.
All right, so we have no idea what we're going to talk about next week. Hopefully things will calm down in Missouri, and you know, we'll have some happier topics to discuss. But who knows? I'm looking forward to another week in the crazy world of sports. So for my co-host, my partner in crime, Marcus Vandenberg, we are going to get up on out of here, and we'll check back with you next week for another edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, The Kings of Sport. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. It started with a pow, and I'm gonna end it with a bang. We got our own thing, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of The Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD. Or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.